keeping the COVID inquiry honest, it's time for the inquiry sessions. My name is Alastair Harding, and in this edition of the Inquiry Sessions here on Reality Check Radio, we're joined by founder of the New Zealand Health Forum, Linda Wharton. Linda has been at the forefront of holistic therapies in New Zealand for over 30 years. She is both a traditional Chinese acupuncturist and a naturopath. And as a member of the New Zealand Register of Acupuncturists, Linda specializes in the holistic treatment of women's health problems. But also, Linda has become well known in these past few years for her work with the New Zealand Health Forum. When I first spoke with Linda sometime back in 2021, she was in the early stages of compiling her people's database of vaccine injured. Since then, she and her distinctive blue, red, and white signs showing the stories of the injured and the dead have traveled the length of our country in an attempt to raise awareness of the harms that the COVID vaccines caused. Linda joins us today to discuss the COVID inquiry and RCR's People's Terms Initiative. Welcome, Linda.
Hey, Alistair. Thank you so much. Delightful to be here with you again. Just before we start, I'll just correct that beautiful intro you gave me and just say that you described in a lovely way my previous life, because I have now closed my clinic. I'm no longer practicing holistic medicine. So that was my pre-COVID career. And once the Health Forum came along, it became completely apparent that I couldn't do both things. So that career is over now.
Okay, let's talk about your experience here. And I'd love to hear an update on that people's database that you put together. How many entries has that grown to?
Sure. Well, it's really been in three sections, because right at the very beginning, when we had no idea what we were doing, but we suddenly became aware that in our health forum group, we were growing rapidly, and we were the repository for so many people sharing their stories of personal harm, what was happening to them after the injection, or what was happening, you know, to a close family member. And so we started lifting those reports out of our group and putting them in an Excel spreadsheet. So it was a very clunky, poor way of doing it, with basically just anecdotal information rather than high quality medical information. So we did that for several months and ended up with a spreadsheet with somewhere near about 2,000 stories on that spreadsheet. But the whole thing became quite unmanageable. And then from there, we realized that kind of recording was really just recording history rather than creating a database that would be of any use for any real purpose, you know, be it a legal purpose. And so then we were lucky enough to attract some people who had the skills to build a digital online recording system. And since then, we've had a team recording adverse events in a very detailed way. So they spend a lot of time with one reporter, and they update the reports, adding in medical testing, scan results, ACC, etc. So we've got about 500 of those reports that are pages long for some people, and would stand up as evidence in any court of law. And then on top of that, we've had another small team of people for about 3 years now, creating what we've called the Citizens Database, which is a database where we have recorded all the deaths that we could find, that the team could find, where we are aware that the person has received at least one or more COVID injections. And this includes a lot of people who have died during that time period while they were working in mandated jobs. And so we knew that in order to be working in that job, mandated at that time, there was the highest likelihood that they were actually COVID vaccinated. So we don't make claims of causality in that database. That's really, we've brought together just almost 1,000 deaths on that database now. And so some of them are highly suspicious as deaths that should be very closely investigated by authorities in New Zealand, young, healthy people with no pre-existing health problems who have died in very close proximity to receiving a COVID injection. So that's the kind of thing we've been collecting. And like I say, we don't make claims. We're not MedSafe. We don't say the vaccine killed these people, but we say, hey, here's 1,000 people that have died, many of them from the kind of serious adverse event type events, you know, like blood clots, pulmonary embolisms, strokes, heart attacks, sudden adult death where, you know, they just die in their bathroom or they're found dead in bed and they were previously well. And that's the database that NZDSOS has submitted several times to the government and the Ministry of Health with a covering letter, you know, demanding it be investigated.
I'll get on to that in just one moment, but just hearing all of that, I would expect that the authorities are extremely grateful to you for collecting all that information, no doubt.
Oh, I love your wry sense of humour, Alistair. No, I don't think I'm New Zealander of the Year in the eyes of the authorities. And I really appreciate NZDSO as putting their, you know, their medical mana behind submitting that database, because I'm not a doctor. You know, I'm a citizen. I'm a New Zealander who somehow found myself in this position. And needless to say, each time the database has been submitted, I believe the first two times it was submitted, there wasn't even an acknowledgement issued. But then from there has been an acknowledgement with a sort of a pro forma response that, you know, we have adequate pharmacovigilance and the vaccine is safe and effective, basically.
Let's go on to the COVID inquiry and how your work is going to be used in that. Here at RCR, we've been promoting the People's Terms, which can be found at www.covidinquiry.co.nz. That's inquiry with an I. This is an RCR initiative, and we're using it to encourage as many people as possible to submit to the COVID inquiry, submit their stories. Have you put in a submission yet?
I got permission. I approached the commission for permission to submit an organisational submission, which the restrictions and the terms for that are outside of the very narrow restrictions placed on, you know, just ordinary Joe Bloggs individual submissions. And so because I wasn't actually given a guideline for the kind of restrictions that applied to me as an organisation, I have taken the opportunity to share with the commissioners the reality of harm experienced by tens of thousands of health forum members, because my submission is on behalf of those people that the health forum represents. And of course, our community is predominantly people who were harmed by the vaccines personally, or who had loved ones who were harmed. They're also bereaved family members of people who died unexpectedly after their injection. We also have thousands of people who have been part of our community who were mandated out of their jobs through COVID vaccine mandates. And a lot of those people also experienced having genuine medical grounds to apply for exemptions, but they were turned down. And so the commission has asked us to submit really on two fronts. One is to share our personal story of harm, in what ways the New Zealand COVID response impacted us negatively. And then the other part of the submission, we've been asked to talk about how we would like to see the terms of reference change, because the original COVID inquiry that was established a year ago under the Labor government with Jacinda Ardern, the terms of reference, in other words, the scope of what was going to be examined, the terms of reference were very narrow and didn't at all do justice to what we really needed. So the second part of the submission is telling the commissioners what should be investigated, what do we need them to research, to question, to look into. So that's how I've done my submission. The first part of my submission, the stories of harm, it's not my personal story of harm. I've represented the New Zealanders in the health forum, and I have sent My entire submission is 1,500 pages long, and all but about five of those pages come under that first part of the submission, which is stories of harm. So I have submitted, I don't know, somewhere up to in the 900s of stories. So they are many, many hundreds of stories of how mandates have affected people. And then I've also submitted nearly 250 detailed stories of vaccine harm as well.
1,500 pages.
Yeah.
You're a so, mini inquiry all on your own.
Well, I wasn't given a restriction. So I thought, okay, they haven't told me how many words I'm allowed. So I'm just going to do what they're asking, and that is submit true stories.
And that includes, did you say, around 900 personal stories?
Of mandated out and medical exemptions declined, and then nearly 250 detailed stories of vaccine harm as well, written by individual people. Yeah, not by me, but, you know, stories that were submitted to us. Actually, those reports that I've submitted were the reports that were given to us when I was helping Ali Cook with her petition asking for a Royal Commission of Inquiry into vaccine harms. So we've collated all of those reports together and submitted them under this banner as well.
What does that say to you about the safety and effectiveness of the COVID vaccine?
Oh, well, I hope they will hear from what I have submitted that the harm that has been bestowed upon New Zealanders who simply trusted the government that, you know, to take this novel gene therapy because they were assured it was safe and effective, the harm that has been meted out on Kiwis is completely unprecedented. There has never, ever been another medical intervention in New Zealand that has caused the degree of morbidity, you know, harm, but they're still alive, and mortality, they've died.
Is the speed and the unprecedented nature of the COVID pandemic any excuse for that?
Not at all, because before the before any of the injections were rolled out, in that very first year of the pandemic in 2020, before we had any needles ready to go in any arms, 3 to 4 months in to the quote pandemic, we knew that this virus affected people completely differently. Most people were fine. For most people, even in the early stages, most people, if they became sick, they recovered. They didn't go to hospital, they recovered. And we knew right at the beginning that this was frail, elderly, and comorbid that were highly vulnerable. So by the time, so that was 3 to 4 months in, by the time the actual vaccines were rolled out, we had a really, really good grip on who was at risk. And if there was any need for a vaccine, it should have been targeted to the high-risk population, not used as an experimental therapy across every man, woman, and child and pregnant woman in society.
And then we have the memory of the... I was just doing an interview with Emmanuel Garcia, one of the Wellington doctors who lost his license during all of this, yeah, or has had to retire because of all of this. And we were talking about informed consent. And as we look through one of the news media stories about him being in trouble with the medical council, I came across the line which we've all heard before. In this particular case, it was this, I quote, "Council Chair Dr. Curtis Walker said there was no place for anti-vaccine messages in a medical professional's practice or on their social media." When there is so much evidence of all this harm, how can that actually be a real statement from somebody from the medical council?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, one of the issues that has affected everybody in every country around the world where this new technology has been used is that all of the usual traditional practices of good ethical medical practice have been completely thrown thrown out the window. And not only have they been thrown out the window, but any doctors who wanted to practice in the ethical way that they always had, e.g. genuine informed consent, genuinely, you know, advising patients of what was known, but what was missing, what is still missing in the way of data, and a genuine concern, you know, desire to do an individualized risk benefit assessment for each patient. Mm. All of that was not only not encouraged, it was banned. Any doctor that wanted to practice medicine in an ethical way, the way they always had, you know, basically, like Manny Garcia, they're out on the rear. Like Matt Shelton, no more medical license, because Matt had the audacity to tell his pregnant patients and children and mothers of babies that he didn't have the data to say that it was safe. And it was true.
And now they're lost to their patients here in New Zealand, aren't they? They're lost to the medical system.
They're lost to the medical system. And don't we want those doctors, don't we want them over and above every other compliant doctor that has said stay silent, not even attempted to give genuine informed consent? And some of them, of course, have made a lot of money by actually, you know, being vaccine hubs for their patients. Mm.
Tell me, what are the major ailments that you see? The one that comes to my mind directly is myocarditis. It's a major side effect of these vaccines. What are the major ones that you've seen in your work?
Okay, so, I mean, yes, of course, myocarditis appears to be the one that we are allowed to talk about. It was the one, you know, several months into the rollout that it was kind of like the fall guy. It's like, they're safe, they're effective. There's just this one risk, and it's myocarditis, and it's mild, it's self-limiting. It only affects a tiny little, you know, chunk of the population, males aged, you know, 15 to 25 predominantly. All of that's rubbish. We now know completely that that's rubbish, that women are affected, all age groups are affected. And the majority of people who were diagnosed with myocarditis are still unwell 1 year, some of them even 2 years after they were diagnosed with myocarditis. So we are allowed to talk about that, although the way we speak about it does not reflect the reality of all of the clinical data and the peer-reviewed reports that are coming out in the journals. New Zealand Ministry of Health has not updated that stance from the very beginning, when they acknowledged that it was a risk and they put those reassuring boundaries around that risk. They have not updated that information for New Zealanders. So that's one thing. Then also we've had lots of reports of lots of cardiac stuff, heart attacks, strokes, pericarditis as well. Lots of reports that include things about untreatable, unstable blood pressure issues, especially high blood pressure that becomes non-responsive to medication. Arrhythmias, you know, abnormal heart rhythms and palpitations, tachycardia, racing heart, that kind of thing. And then we've got the neurological stuff. So neurological cardiac things like POTS, where people have got very unstable blood pressure, tachycardia, and, you know, they faint when they stand up, those kind of things. Lots of tingling and numbness in extremities. Some people who can no longer walk properly. Some of the people who became the face of vaccine injury in New Zealand very early on, like Casey. Casey is still reliant predominantly on a wheelchair to get around. So that's about 3 years now that, you know, she's been injured.
Rob Martin,
the same. Both Casey and Rob, when they're at home, have times when they can move around the house, you know, supporting themselves on surfaces or crutches. But when they go out, they still need wheelchairs.
Mm.
And then, you know, those are the more serious kind of things. And then, of course, there are a lot of people who do not now realise that the chronic ill health that has gradually developed over the past 2 to 3 years has got anything to do. They do not realise there's a possibility that their unusual chronic health problems now have got anything to do with the 2, 3, 4 injections they've taken. And they include people with chronic fatigue type issues, you know, young people who previously held down jobs and played sports and are now chronically fatigued and unable to work. And then, of course, there are the unusual cancers. Cancers that used to be called rare and one in a million. If you go to the GoFundMe page now, you read through GoFundMe. That's what it's called, isn't it? GoFundMe? Yeah. Yeah, you read through there and you'll see so many young people having been diagnosed with this rare cancer. And of course, there are now oncologists, brave oncologists, who are speaking out around the world saying that they've been in practice for 20 to 40 years and they've seen a very distinct change in their patient load. So the main things they're seeing is that people that they've cared for 10 or 20 years with very stable cancers in remission have suddenly gone from complete remission to terminal cancer in, you know, a heartbeat. And then they're also talking about the demographic of their patients having changed to being very strongly young people, people who traditionally have got much lower risk of cancer. And then the young people, when they're diagnosed, they're calling them turbo cancers. So they're going from being a healthy young person, finding a lump, a bump, or, you know, developing some bizarre symptom, being checked out and finding that they have stage 3 or 4 cancer already. And then their life prognosis is very short.
One of the most heartbreaking parts of that is we had Nathaniel Mead on this show on the Inquiry Sessions. He was the lead author on a paper. Some of the other authors on there were Steve Kirsch and also Peter McCullough. And they wrote a scientific paper looking at the research, looking at Pfizer and Moderna's clinical trial data. Yeah. And they found out that looking at that trial data from before anybody had the vaccine, before or during the trials, that all of these things were actually known about at that point. And that's just so heartbreaking to hear, you know, that's what's happening to people.
Yeah, they absolutely. When you go back and you look at that trial data with eyes that, you know, with no conflict of interest and no paycheck at the end of looking at the trial data, you can see it's all there. All of the rare sudden onset cancers, the heart attacks, the strokes, the myocarditis, and the trial coordinators that looked through each of those adverse events, you just see page after page of them commenting, not believed to be associated, you know, not connected, just, and you read them and you think, how? How are they saying this? Just writing them all off.
Okay. How important is it for people to submit to the COVID inquiry, in your opinion?
It is absolutely crucial. It is absolutely crucial. We're traveling at the moment and we're very social, meeting with a lot of people, you know, like-minded people all over New Zealand. And I've been actually quite disheartened, to be honest, to see the number of people who have not submitted a personal, you know, have not written a personal submission. And the reason is that they've just completely lost faith in the system. They've lost belief in the fact that their voice could make any difference to anything. And I can understand that, but I came across a new OIA yesterday. I don't know whether you've seen it. It came out around the 24th of February, but I only read it yesterday. And in that OIA, the submitter asked for what conflicts of interest had been conceded or acknowledged for Tony Blakely. And the question was, did Tony Blakely know Ashley Bloomfield personally, you know, have contact, etc.? The answers from Tony Blakely was that he had a close collegial relationship. These are the actual words from the OIA. He had a close collegial relationship and friendship with many key players in the New Zealand COVID response, including Ashley Bloomfield. And Tony Blakely acknowledged that he provided advice to key policymakers in New Zealand and advisors on the New Zealand pandemic response, including Ashley Bloomfield. So how can he be the chairperson for our inquiry?
Okay, so he's been asked to chair the commission looking over his own advice and his own performance. So if there's any doubt in anybody's mind, please cast it to the wind right now. If you haven't submitted to the COVID inquiry, please do so right now. Please visit www.covidinquiry.co.nz. That's inquiry with an I. And you can see there how you can submit your story and register your support for the People's Terms. That's www.covidinquiry.co.nz. Linda, thank you so much for everything you've done throughout the past few years, and thanks for joining us here today. You've been an inspiration and a strength for many of us, I can assure you.
Oh, thanks, Alistair. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and I love coming on RCR. Thank you for all that you guys are doing. And I believe, if I'm not wrong, today's happy birthday, is it?
Reality Check Radio is 1 year old today when we're recording this. Of course, it won't be by the time it plays on RCR, but yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, happy birthday. Good job, guys.
That's Linda Wharton here to tell us about her part she's playing in the COVID-19 inquiry. For all of you who haven't yet submitted to the COVID inquiry, please visit www.covidinquiry.co.nz and see how you can submit your stories and register your support for the People's Terms. My name is Alistair Harding, and you've been listening to the inquiry sessions only on Reality Check Radio.
The RCR Inquiry Sessions. Unpacking the COVID response for an honest inquiry.